It's a, I know. Maybe we can like go somewhere after this and pretend like we're interviewing somewhere like in the stacks or something.
It could just be you guys like you here over the shoulder like them too. But I'm scared a little bit about losing my, just pointing that out.
I look good anywhere, so yeah, I can switch up here. I look fine anywhere.
I don't know. Maybe sunlight's not the best for an interview about the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're okay. Okay. So, all right, you guys. You have a feeling. Your website says that you focus mostly on ghosts in California.
Mm-hmm.
How do California ghosts compare to ghosts from other parts of the world?
They compare to other parts of the world in that California is our home state, mm-hmm. and we regularly interface with teams in other states. We don't really do any investigations outside of California. We usually delegate that to another team that we get in contact with. We've been invited out as far as Louisiana. But we actually delegated that to one of our sister teams out there.
I'm sure there's some ghost teams in New Orleans.
Oh,
yeah.
A couple. My co-director, Chris, actually went to the Myrtle Plantation, actually, and he had a very nice time. He got me a shirt from there. So he seemed to enjoy it. He didn't say if there were any experiences. We said the place definitely had a creepy vibe and quite a bit of history.
Wow. Cool. That's a great place. Okay. Was there...
If I could just add to that.
Of course.
Basically, when you really break it down, a true spirit is somebody that used to be alive. So most of the time, they're going to have the same personality that they had, you know, while they're still living. And that would kind of make a difference from, you know, ghosts in other parts of the world because they're just people from other parts of the world.
Hmm. I like that answer.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Okay, was there a particular experience that made you want to be a paranormal investigator?
We both have them, but I think we should start with yours first, Ashley, because yours goes further back.
Okay. Well, when I was, I was probably 7 or 8. I was, living with my parents, of course, at that tender age. And for a while, a period of several months, there was a little boy that would appear in my doorway at night. And I couldn't figure it out. You know, it's like, okay, and all I did is stood there and looked. You know, it's like, well, you know, I'm wondering what I'm doing here. Yeah. But that's, you know, I told my parents about it. And they said, oh, no such thing as ghosts. And so eventually he disappeared, probably because I thought there's no such thing as a ghost. Several years later, when my wife and I got married, our first apartment was haunted. She called one day, and it was here in Burbank. She called me one day at work, and she said, you need to get home now. I'm getting out of the apartment. There's a man in here. I said, I'm on my way. Call Burbank PD, and they'll come out and they'll take care of it. They're not going to come out for this. I said, why not? It's a police department. She said, because it's only half a man. He's going to waste up. He's in the bathroom. I said, okay. So we stayed for a while, and we went through different experiences in the apartment. We had a collection of teddy bears. One night we came in, and they were all laid out on the ground like in a morgue.
Like in a morgue?
Like in a morgue. They were just, you know, stiff. It was perfectly lined up, head against the couch. Somebody had taken them and set them there. Because of the way they were on the couch, if they fell, they would have been all over the place. There was one night when I was sitting in the dining room, and I heard a bang, and as I heard the bang, our cabinet shelf was open, and there was a half a dozen cans of, like, you know, beans and corn and stuff that had come straight out and dropped straight onto the floor, standing up like they were in the cabinet. Had they fallen, they would have hit the counter and been all over the place. The thing that pretty much killed it was one night my wife got up to go to the bathroom. She came back and she had described this thing, so they called it a butterfly, went right through her. And we had the paranormal investigators from UCLA, from Kerry Gaynor and his team from the School of Parapsychology. They said, oh yeah, this is haunted. There's no doubt about it. They told us, you know, what was there. And they said that they're attracted to my wife. And she says, so I can read by my own light is what you're saying. And he said, yeah, you send out a beacon. So we left there, and we've really not had too many more instances since then.
Wow.
Yeah, we've kind of been around it all of our lives. The one that did it for me, I was about 12 years old, and I was in the car with my mom, and we were, I don't remember where we were driving, it was probably to the market. I liked going to the market a lot, because at the time they usually had free samples. And anyone who knows me knows I like food. So we're driving down the street, going to the market, and my mom and I are stopped at this light at this intersection, and we're going down the street, and off to the right is a street that dead ends, and there's an alley that cuts through it, perpendicular to it. So we're looking over, just looking around, waiting for the light to turn green, and right as the light turns green and we're going past it, we're still looking just because I don't know why we were still looking. Here comes this guy on a bicycle coming down the street towards the intersection. Right about when he gets to the alley, a car comes out. It was some kind of what I would say was maybe a luxury car. It looked kind of like a Lexus or something like that. That kind of body type hits him off his bike. He goes flying into the wall. The bike goes flying. The car keeps going. So we figure it's a hit and run. My mom screams. We gun it at the next light. When that light turns green, she flips a U-turn and comes back to the intersection. We get out of the car, and we're looking around. There was nobody. There was no bicycle. There was no glass. There was no paint chips anywhere. There was no evidence that anything had happened. And the weirdest thing of all was that when the collision happened, it's weird to explain just thinking about it, but when there's a metal on metal collision, there's a very unique sound, especially when that very large metal body has hit a human body. There's a very distinct sound. We had the windows rolled down. With the speed that car hit the bicyclist, there should have been a sound. There was zero sound whatsoever. From that point on, I knew that I wanted to at least start at some point when I got older, trying to help people find answers to problems they could be having and things they were uncomfortable with, because I never got an answer to mine. And I live with that to this day. And so I formed the team for that express purpose of trying to help other people reason out what's happening and make them comfortable in their own surroundings, because I still to this day don't know what happened, and that bothers me.
Okay. And just to be clear, your wife is your...
He's my dad. The wife is my mom.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Okay. The question I wrote down in the middle of that was, which you also kind of sort of already answered, but do you think it's a coincidence that you've had so many paranormal experiences, or is it because your wife and mom was like a conduit for the supernatural?
As strong as the haunting was that she and I lived with, I think it was like 99% her, even though I had had, you know, my previous experience.
Right.
But with her being, you know, having the beam out there and saying, you know, hey, I'm over here, I think that has really, you know, it's allowed certain things to happen. It's also opened me up more to, you know, being more aware of things. And I think it's... you know, from her, it's probably given you a lot more sensitivity as well there, Matt.
Yeah, it's her. There's a lot of interesting things that have happened in my life, especially when I was a kid. And as a young boy, you tend to get into trouble. Mm-hmm. And you tend to get into a... Yeah, I know. You tend to get into a lot of trouble as a young boy. And my mom, it's the weirdest thing, we would call her a human lie detector, because she would get what she calls these feelings. And she would know something happened when she had no logical way of ever knowing it. there was a point in time where my dad could tell her just what someone looked like, and she would know within about what length of time he was going to get fired without ever meeting the person.
Wow.
And she tells me just certain weird things that happen. We have seen apparitions together. We've made predictions of things. The problem is we only know, like, bad or useless stuff. Neither of us can ever hit the lottery, and that's a problem. We want to make this thing work for us, but we only seem to know anything that's bad or something that's completely useless. So I guess there's a benefit to that, too, because at least we're knowing things that, by all logical explanation, we should never be privy to. But, I mean, I knew my grandfather was going to die before anybody else did. I was sitting in my dorm room at UC Irvine, and I was studying for a philosophy final. And I was trying to read the entire philosophy book in one sitting. Pro tip, don't do that. Because it's a 500-page book. Very, very dry material. I'm interested in philosophy, but when you're cramming for a final you have the next morning, and it's 11 o'clock at night, not such a good idea. So I'm sitting there reading my book, and my grandfather's already in the hospital. And I'm reading something about ethics. And I look up, and I look at my wall. And out loud, I said, "It's okay, Grandpa, you can go now." 3 minutes later, I get a phone call, and it's my mom. She was at the hospital. And she said, "Hi, Matt." And I said, "Hi, what's going on?" And she said, "I need to tell you something." And I said, "Grandpa died." She said, "How did you know?" And I said, "I just know." And as I get older, I have more and more of those "I just know" moments, and I cannot explain it. Sometimes it's really creepy, and it freaks me out. Other times, it's kind of nice to know some of this stuff because there's a sense of comfort to it.
So is that that connection to the paranormal, is it a hereditary thing, or is it pure just like physical proximity to your mom?
You know, I'm honestly not sure. Sometimes it might be proximity, but there's a lot of cases where, I mean, my parents and I, we live in two completely separate cities, and we're several miles away. There's a lot of it that I think is hereditary, but I think it can be amplified in my mom's room. I know I'm saying all this with a straight face, but this is all stuff that's actually happening. And it's the weirdest thing when I tell people, too. It's so crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
So those, what is there a story behind the founding of it? It was just inspired by all those particular events and you?
It was, yeah. It was inspired by that event where I had... I saw the guy getting hit off his bike, and then with my dad, him seeing the child, and then having time go on and being in that apartment. I had one other thing happen when I was 5, and I never told you this, actually.
Oh, all right.
So there would be times where I would just sleep out in the living room, and one of these times what happened is I woke up in the middle, probably like maybe 3:30 in the morning, and I looked up, and I looked at my doorway, and I saw a man standing in my doorway. And he was reading a newspaper. I can honestly say for years I repressed that memory because it scared me. And it scared me so much because he was in my room, and I got a feeling of dread from looking at him, and for a while I didn't exactly feel safe. And it was happening in my home, and that scared me.
Yeah. Could have been Uncle Lou because that was his apartment, and he liked reading the newspaper.
Maybe. Did he also like scaring small children? Because I would buy that, too.
I think him just being around could scare small children.
And it did.
Yeah. Very sweet call of that. awesome guy he had. And I remember, this is the stories that I hear, but he had two teeth in his mouth. Neither one touched the other. One on the top over here, one on the bottom over here. And he, to drink hot coffee, he would pour it on into the saucer, and then he would drink it out of the saucer. It's one of his little quirks. But, from one of them. Yeah, what I hear, it could have been considered creepy by some people, especially small children.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And at that point in time, I'd never experienced anything like that before because I was so young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So how often, like how many investigations do you do in an average month?
We don't really keep a tally because we don't go out and search for them ourselves. We usually wait for people to contact us, so we're not going out and bothering people. We usually do a few a year based on need, but the way that we tend to see it is if people are not contacting us, there's either no problem or they haven't gotten to the point where they need a team like us to come out.
Okay.
As you find a lot of people, when they do have situations, they're, you know, they start off in denial, oh, you know, that was nothing, that was the house settling, or, you know, litany of standard excuses. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a long time before, well, sometimes it takes a long time before they get to the point that, hey, we need some outside assistance here. If nothing else, just to find out if that we're not crazy. There is something going on.
But you're not like a, like a person, what's it called, like a... Exorcist, like you're not like an exorcist, like
no.
In that type of way. You just find out what happens. You
right.
Don't necessarily get rid of.
No, that's one thing that we don't promise. I mean, we, mm-hmm. you know, we have team members that know people that are in the clergy that, you know, could be referred to the client, and if they don't have their own priest or, you know, reverend, whatever faith that they happen to be.
We do have people we can call, but we're not trained to do that ourselves.
We can't.
And if an untrained group does that, it could very possibly make something worse. So we stay hands off in that case, but we will refer them to someone that's actually trained in that if need be.
Yeah, on your website it says that when you go into a situation, mm-hmm. you are initially trying to prove that it's not paranormal.
Right.
That wasn't a question. But can you, like, expand on that?
You're right, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what it says. That's 100% what it says. So our standard operating procedure when we go into an investigation is, as you said, trying to prove that there is a natural explanation for the events that are happening. 90 to 95% of the things we've ever come across, there's been a natural explanation. When a clock has fallen out of the wall, it turned out that the part of the wall that the clock was in, there was a hole in that piece of the wood, and when the room got hot, the wood would expand, therefore the hole would expand and the clock would fall. So we try to find natural explanations whenever possible, because it's so easy to just give up and say, oh, this must be paranormal. No, yeah, you actually have to try to reason it out with evidence. I'm an engineer by training, and I have a lot of backing in science and things like that. A lot of my training is just completely logical, so I don't want to go into something and say, oh, you know, this is absolutely paranormal, because one, what you're going to do is, depending on the mood of the client, you're either going to suggest that something's happening that's not really happening, or you're just going to freak them out more. And the people that tend to call us tend to already be at the point where they're freaked out enough, and if a team suggests something that's not actually happening, there could be real ramifications behind that. There have been cases where people have up and left their houses because a paranormal team suggested there was something happening when there wasn't, because they didn't bother to dig deep enough into it. And that's one of the reasons I have a serious problem with the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine Warren. I have a serious problem with them.
They're the couple that the movie The Conjuring was based on?
And the Amityville Horror.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. And the Amityville Horror was proven to be a hoax, and they adamantly defended the fact that there was a severe haunting happening. So when something is proven to be a hoax and they're saying there is absolute activity going on, I'm going to side with science.
Part of the proof was the people that were reporting all the activity came out eventually and said it's all fake.
Yeah, they were doing a book deal.
Yeah.
And the Warrens stood behind their analysis of the situation. You know, points to them for being consistent and, you know, holding your own, but all things considered, when you're proven wrong, you're wrong. And so I've also been hearing people say that the movie that just came out, The Conjuring 2, they actually had nothing to do with the case. And they were written into it by the writers.
Yeah. Honestly, that doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah, me.
same recognition to go along with it.
Exactly. But, if you know, it might make for an interesting script, an interesting plot, but people got to understand that didn't ever happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Do they still claim it, though? Is that an original story or, like, a real story that has happened?
They still claim the Amityville Horror. I don't know if they're saying anything about the issue from The Conjuring. Mm-hmm. But they definitely still claim to the Amityville haunting. Unfortunately, Ed died a while back, and mm-hmm. now it's just Lorraine. Mm-hmm. But they're, you know, she's still claiming it.
Yeah. Interesting. So you said, a clock falling off the wall. People living in the house would see that as evidence of the paranormal. What,
right.
How do you even figure that out? Like, what process do you go through to figure out that it's just a like, physics?
What makes you think it's not an earthquake instead of, like, you know, a ghost?
Well, that's a very good point. It absolutely could be something. I mean, we do live in California, so there's a real possibility it could be that. But in this case, what we did is the client even said, yeah, you know, this only seems to happen when I'm cooking in the kitchen. So my first thought was, okay, well, certain materials expand or contract based on temperature. Let's test it. So we heated the room, and the clock fell out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very thin wood paneling.
Yeah. So in a case like that, we actually carry thermometer gauges as well, where we can point it at an object and get an infrared temperature reading to actually test certain cases where, you know, some people say there, you know, there could be cold spots. And if there are, well, that's why we have thermometers, just in case the temperature drops 10, 15 degrees. Mm-hmm. We've had cases where it's happened, and it's been interesting. That was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there a physical explanation for that?
Couldn't find one.
Yeah.
That's not to say that it's paranormal,
right?
But all I usually say in that case is I cannot find a logical explanation because I really can't. That doesn't mean it's paranormal. It could be something really, really weird, but it doesn't mean it's paranormal. And I always come across saying that because I don't want to ever have anyone confused by what my motives are.
Let me write in the next question. Has there ever been a situation where you said definitively this is paranormal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, when you get a man's face on camera floating down from the top of the frame and the place where the camera's pointing is 7.5 feet off the ground, and then when there's nobody in the room and then you show it to the client and she says, "That's my husband," we kind of had to say, okay, that looks like there's something going on here.
Wow. Okay, with her husband...
quite deceased.
Okay. Yes, and he was also... See, we think it's kind of a funny story because in some cases we kind of believe he might have been screwing with us because he was a very, very, very staunch non-believer. And the fact that it was his wife calling in investigators to see if he was a ghost, that's... Someone should write a book about that. Or make a movie, but not Conjuring, but like a better movie.
Right.
Wow. Okay, you have that on film?
That's one of the things I'm going to present today.
Wow. Do you guys have like a YouTube channel or something?
No, we actually don't usually post our stuff publicly because the majority of our investigations are in private residences.
Okay.
So when we do show it, it's rare for us to show it. But we never have any identifying information when we do. Mm-hmm. And the individuals on screen are usually always the investigators. And we're in the public eye anyway.
Right.
So... If I'm on a video or Dale's on a video, we kind of expect it to happen. Mm-hmm. But we never post a video that has our client or identifying characteristics of the location within the video itself if we're going to show something.
Okay.
Yeah, usually the most identifying we give is either residence or commercial property.
Exactly.
Or a university, which, you know, you've got a lot of experience with that.
Oh, boy. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So you're a Woodbury graduate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, class 2002, Italian CIS.
Okay, and you went to Irvine.
Yes, UC Irvine 2010.
Okay.
In informatics. Oh, yes.
Cool. Yeah, what was your experience? How about this question? Did you ever notice anything paranormal about the library while you were here?
Just kind of, you know, weird feeling. Like it's a little feeling of like unease, especially later on in the evening. But never, you know, voices or, you know, book falling or anything like that. So it was kind of nice to be invited, you know, to come back in and take a look around again.
Yeah.
Official capacities.
Yeah, people all joke all the time about how it's haunted, and
yeah,
this will be very interesting.
I used to say that about my old high school, too. Like,
yeah.
It was built on an Indian burial ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, dug up the graves, and they, like, moved the graves and built the school.
Where'd you go to high school?
Idlewild, Pico.
Oh, okay.
It's like in Palm Springs.
Yeah, that's prime Indian land out there.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, that actual kind of thing right there is roughly the plot of the movie Poltergeist, mm-hmm. except it was a housing development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. It was built on top of a graveyard, but the bodies were, the heads, the graves were moved, but the bodies remained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there was a separation of the two. But in your case, the bodies, you know, were gone.
Yeah. I read that, like, they never even mentioned that it's an ancient burial ground in Poltergeist. Like, that's just, like, a societal, like,
thing. Yeah, the House of Roman never mentioned it.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. But that's a great movie.
Dude, wait.
I
love that movie.
Okay.
I love that. I'm going to add that movie, man. Fantastic. Fantastic.
What do you think of Ghostbusters?
The new one or the old one?
The original.
Yeah, the original. I'm a very, very big fan of the original, not so much the second, even though I got to tell you, I think the Stay Puft Man's adorable. that gigantic marshmallow like that, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Love that guy. Yeah. I haven't seen the new one, though.
Either way. Do you have a favorite line from the original? I know a lot of fans do.
No, actually, no. Okay. Even though I love Bill Murray.
Yeah.
I really, really love Bill Murray.
That's a good one, yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah, really.
It's a great movie. It's a classic.
Seriously, yeah. That's a good one. If you could, oh wait, where was I? Oh, sort of. Yeah. If you don't mind my asking, sure. what do you guys do for a living?
I'm an accountant with a regional building maintenance and janitorial service. I'm a corporate controller.
I am the software engineering and IT mentor for an academic department at Cal State University Northridge.
Okay. Interesting. Do your coworkers there know that in your spare time you're paranormal investigators?
In my case, only some of them.
Okay.
Because I don't bring it up too much. We have a lot of students coming and going, and I don't want to bring anything up unless they directly ask me. Some of them have found my site, and then I'm very, very open to talking about it.
Sure.
But usually when we're there, we're just working. We're okay. Just working and focus on the education.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm finishing up my second week at the job, so I haven't mentioned it to anybody yet, but I fully intend to.
Give them time. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll get it out there.
Right. What do people think of it? What do your students or your colleagues, what is their opinion of it?
They think it's a very, very interesting field, and they ask me, quite often, can we go on an investigation with you? And unless it's a public, commercial, or commercial location, my answer is no. Mm-hmm. Because for the private residence investigations, it's only the trained members, just so we avoid any weird mishaps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you could investigate any location in the world, is there any, what would it be?
I gotta think about that one.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I like it.
That really is.
I like all your questions.
Yeah, there's a lot. I would actually like to investigate the Pioneer Saloon in Good Springs, Nevada.
Okay.
One of the most haunted locations in Nevada. And my wife and I were up there on the week of July the 4th, actually. And we got to go and look around. The place was open at the time, so I got to see the different little highlights of it. One of the areas is really nice. It's got three bullet holes exiting through tin out to the outside where gambler met his end for cheating. Tossed down five aces, and that was the end of him. Three-day card game, so nobody was really amused at that point in time. But it's reputed to be insanely haunted.
Wow.
So that would be my first pick, I think.
Okay, that's not too far away.
Not at all.
Just don't throw away.
Yeah.
For me, that would probably be, I would have to say the Winchester Mystery House.
Oh, yeah?
Good choice.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently there's not always a whole lot of activity that went down, and one of our members actually did go down at one point, and he said that nothing really happened. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be really, really neat to go there at night, grab our equipment, and see if anything happens. And I think it would be cool just from an architecture standpoint.
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of things going on in that house because the family that owned it, I mean, Sarah Winchester, essentially went crazy.
Right.
And she was saying that she was constantly being haunted by the spirits of those that were killed with Winchester rifles. And so she kept building and building and building. In the hopes that if she continued building, it would appease the spirits. So she was really building, according to her, she was really building the house for them, not for her. So what she wound up doing and why the house is so strange inside is she deliberately dead-ended some of the halls, made doors that lead out into nowhere, staircases that lead into the ceiling, because what she was apparently trying to do was confuse the spirits. And she thought if she could continue building and cause all this ruckus, they would be satisfied and they would leave her alone.
Wow. I've heard of that, and I thought it was just an old lady, and like a kooky old lady in a crazy house she built. I didn't know she was trying to appease the spirits.
Right.
That's crazy. Okay. Yeah. All right. I can see how that would be interesting.
Oh, yeah. And even just from an architecture standpoint, I think that's just neat.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's like a maze.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta get up to the guys that built it.
Oh, I know. I know.
Is there a good, lesser known, I suppose, public haunted place in Burbank that you guys know of?
Burbank, not one off the top of my head that I'm aware of.
Then I guess maybe like in the greater LA area.
I've heard of the Roosevelt Hotel being haunted by the spirit of Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
She apparently appears in one of the mirrors on one of, I don't remember which floor, it's one of the upper floors by the elevators. And they also had reports that there was a room that was never rented out, and the phone inside kept calling down to the front desk. And eventually they disconnected the phone, and it kept happening.
Oh, boy.
They don't know what it was, but I think that's the one that at least sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, the Chateau Marmont, where John Belushi passed away, that's reputed to be haunted as well. And it was before his death, so... It's been going on for a while.
Yeah, you just joined the party.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
This might be me breaking an interview rule by telling a story, but it's not even really a story.
That's great.
So I grew up in Redondo Beach,
mm-hmm.
And my whole family, I guess, they're not, you wouldn't think they were believed the paranormal, but they do. And my grandma claims to have seen a ghost at the San Vicente Lighthouse in Palos Verdes.
Oh,
I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're familiar? Yeah. Have you ever been down there?
No.
Mm-hmm. I always go down there. So,
yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, still have lots of places to go. So.
Yes.
So, yeah, I imagine a ghost there wouldn't cause too much trouble to any inhabitants. So.
Right.
With it being a lighthouse and all, you know, I think you're safe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll be concerned.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, that's a really cool story.
Yeah, So I'll save that one for the end. Maybe this is a totally natural time to bring this up.
Well, you got us here, so
yeah.
Ask whatever you want.
When I was like 8, this is my only kind of ghost story. Well, maybe you should. What's like the terminology you guys use? Because I've used supernatural, paranormal, and ghosts, and I don't know if there's a word that you try to refrain from using, or you're fine with all of it.
I'll typically say paranormal.
Yeah.
Just because it's kind of an umbrella term.
Yeah, it's like all encompassing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
But all things considered, the terminology that the person who's telling the story wants to use, whatever they want to call it, perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I was probably like 8. My house had a downstairs bedroom that didn't get used,
mm-hmm.
Except sort of by me to watch TV and whatever. And it was Christmas Eve, and I'd gotten a Lego set. It was the Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets, right?
Geez.
So it was whatever.
Yeah,
please. I got Legos for Christmas this year.
Nice.
So it was. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the math here. It doesn't really matter. But it was like 2002 because it would have been after the second Harry Potter movie came out, because that was the set I was building. And everyone else in my family was still eating dinner or in the living room, and I just sort of became like aware of just I like kind of what you said, like a presence, and it sounded like a humming sound, like a woman humming. There was no one else in the room. I couldn't see anybody, but it sounded like humming coming from a woman, sort of pacing back and forth across the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that experience, and I went and told my mom about it, and I was a little bit freaked out.
Sure.
Not so much that my brother and I were sharing the upstairs bedroom, and I got so upset with him once. Like, a couple years later, I moved downstairs into that bedroom, so it didn't freak me out long term. But so I told my mom about it, and she it freaked her out a little bit because she had thought our house is haunted since the day we moved in.
Interesting.
It was built in the 70s. I don't know who the people who lived there before were, but she had told me this story about how when she moved in the late 80s, my dad left, or, you know, it went to work or whatever, and she was home alone and, like, had that same thing where she was like, I'm not the only one here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all being said, I've grown up and I'm more skeptical of ghosts now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of willing to chalk up what I heard to just like, I was a kid, like, I don't know what that was. While my mom has like maintained like, no, ghosts are real, I believe in them.
Mm-hmm.
You would make a good investigator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Looking for natural causes, you would make a good investigator.
So what is it that I guess has maintained your belief in all this? And is it just like the fact that you've had more experiences than most or more convincing experiences?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with our level of experience with it, both personal and then professional during our investigations and such. That the more, at least for me, the more I see of it, the more I'm convinced that there is something there. There's more to, you know, what's around us than what we can generally just, you know, observe or sense in the, you know, immediate time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And all things considered, for me, I grew up around it. So
you
I never had a chance.
Jinx.
See, can you tell the family? If it wasn't apparent before.
Yeah,
I grew up around it. So it's always been a part of my life, and as I got older, I started accepting it more and more, and then when I had that experience when I was 12, I was set on trying to figure out what was going on, and then it just grew from there.
Wow. Okay.
And then just my desire to actually help people figure out what's going on with them has, you know, fueled even a lot more of my passion about it.
Wow. Okay. And then my... That's not that paper. And then I guess my big closer was probably a pretty easy one. You say on your website that you don't accept compensation for your work.
That's correct.
So why do you do it?
Love of the field, love of helping other people, and it's also a great way for us to experience additional things and, you know, add to our, you know, book of knowledge.
Mm. Okay. What if you had to, like, what if you had to, like, assign a percentage? Like, what percent is helping people and what percent is learning more?
For me, it's probably 70-30 with learning.
Okay. Do you have any?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Would you mind restating the question?
So it was, you say on your website that you don't accept compensation, so why... Why do you do it? Why are you a member of the Burbank Paranormal Research?
My main drive is genuinely helping people. I want them to feel safe in their own surroundings because I remember when I didn't. And I remember not having an answer for something that happened to me and when something scared me as a kid and I didn't know what was going on, I didn't know why it had happened. So I've spent all this time, we've actually been in existence for 11 and a half years now. We've spent all this time trying to help others, you know, at least try to understand or become comfortable in their own surroundings so they don't have to look for another home or they don't have to look for another job or they don't have to look for another school for their kids. We do this, one, because we love it, and two, just because people need us. And people need people like us. And in terms of the percentage, it's about 90-10 for me, with 90% of it being the helping aspect and 10% learning more.
All right, cool. I think that may have been all my questions.
All right.
Fantastic. I think you guys have about... I'm gonna turn it off. All right, cool. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You guys have about 20 minutes before